everybody. So, welcome to America's Most Wanted. This is episode one about Glenn Stewart Godwin. I'm going to go ahead and give you some of his background information, including, you know, his date of birth, his spouse, height, weight, aliases, and his charges and convictions. So, Glenn was born on June 26th of 1958. Of course, that makes him a Cancer. He was born in Miami, Florida, although he did move to Palm Springs in California in the 1960s. Now, I haven't been able to find a name for either of his parents. They don't seem to be very active with him as far as there's reportings on him. So I'm going to assume they were just too disappointed in Glenn to take part in any of his adult life. His spouse, her name is Shelley Godwin. Further in the story, I will bring her back up. She is going to aid him in escaping from prison, but I will get into her. Glenn is 6 foot. He's said to weigh roughly between 170 pounds to 200 pounds. There is currently a reward on his head for $20,000. His aliases, now forgive me if I can't say these right, are Michael Carrera, Miguel Carrera, Michael Carmen, Glenn Godwin, Glenn S. Godwin, Dennis H. McWilliams, and Dennis Harold McWilliams. His current charges would be murder, prison escape, and unlawful flight to avoid confinement. That is if he is found. He has been convicted of murder in 1983, robbery, and also 1983, that would be the same trial. He attempted escape from prison in 1987, and then he was convicted in 1991 for drug trafficking. In the 1983 conviction, he was sentenced to 26 years to life. He was then sentenced in 1991 to 7 years in prison. Glenn was originally added to America's Most Wanted list on December 7th of 1996, although he was removed from the America's Most Wanted list on May 19th of 2016. In 2016, they decided he no longer met the top 10 requirements, so he is now number 447 on the America's Most Wanted list. So, Glenn attended Palm Springs High School, and he actually graduated in 1975. He's said to have done really well in school. He played trumpet in the band. He was in the Desert Sun newspaper for his honor roll. You know, he was a really good kid, clearly. He didn't have any criminal history, nothing. So, he lived with his roommate, Frank Soto Jr., in a condo. Godwin, he was self-employed as a tool salesman, a mechanic, and a construction worker. So he was a very busy man, obviously, and he seems to, like, want to do well for himself. He's self-employed with all these titles. So this is where Godwin's story begins to change. He goes from being this stand-up guy to a horrible human. So Godwin and Soto, they had planned to rob a former friend of theirs, Kim Robert LaValle. Now, LaValle was a drug dealer, but also a pilot. That's some combination if you ask me, but so, they just planned to rob him. Just rob. Now, the two, they went to him and was like, hey, why don't you come back to the condo? Let's hang out. Let's catch up. Since they're saying he was a former friend. And LaVallee was down for it. He came over to their condo and I guess was just hanging out. Now, this is where it takes a turn for the worst for Kim. Soto begins holding down Kim while Godwin kicks and punches and beats this man. That, I guess, just didn't give him enough satisfaction. And he begins to strangle Kim. Now, I don't know why they're going to all these lengths just to rob him. To me, that seems more as a act of passion. Why are they targeting, a former friend just to rob him? And then not only rob him, but also beat him and allow the man to know who he's looking at. Again, I think from square one, this was planned to always be more than a robbery. I'm gonna assume that not even strangling was a. I don't even know what word to use. I'm gonna assume it wasn't enough of a satisfaction, also, I guess, for a lack of a better word. So at that point, Godwin grabs a knife out of the kitchen and proceeds to stab Kim 26 times. Now, if that isn't an act of passion, I don't know what is. I'm not an investigator, I'm not a cop, I'm just a normal girl. But I know enough about psychology to know that that isn't random. Of course, it's not random for the fact that, they did know Kim prior to this, but I don't think that he. I don't think that they would just randomly kill their best friend. Or I say best friend, a former friend. I don't think they would do that. I don't think many people would, for someone who went from being this great guy, honor roll, band, 3 self-employed jobs. Why? This man clearly had done something to the two that either hadn't come to light to anyone else to testify, or it was more than just a robbery. I don't know. I don't know. What I do know is that something's fishy. You don't just stab somebody 26 times for shits and giggles. You just don't do that. Unless you're a sociopath. But he has no form past record of being a sociopath, no record of being in therapy and whatnot. So I feel like they, being that they're former friends, they probably had a falling out. It was probably something serious. Maybe, he was their drug dealer. Maybe he could quit selling to them or something crazy. Something that you typically wouldn't kill somebody for. So back to the, storyline. He kills him by stabbing him 26 times. Now they realize, oh no, what are we gonna do with this body? And not have it traced back to us as the murderers. So the two load up Kim's body into a truck and drive it out into the desert. So they then take a homemade explosive and strap it to Kim's body. Once they strapped to his body, I guess they took off, but they assumed it was going to disguise the murder. It was going to look like, oh my God, this guy blew up in the desert. Maybe it was just his truck that blew up. They didn't put much thought into this. They didn't realize that there's going to be pieces of him that are almost intact, maybe not the whole body, But the police were able to figure out Kim was in fact stabbed. They were able to figure out that this explosive was strapped to his body. It was very clear that there was foul play immediately when the police got there. A few people that were residents of Eagle Mountain were actually the ones who found him on August 3rd of 1980. Now, what I'm curious about is, so the two of them, they loaded up this dead body into a truck, right? They drove the truck into the desert, right? How did they get out of the desert? Did they walk? Because if they did that, again, they were not thinking about the fact that there was going to be footsteps that could be traced. Or somebody could identify them. I don't know. These two, they just, everything about this story is very sloppy. So, the trial part and where they finally get arrested. So, they were able to be identified after the killing of this man. I guess I'm going to assume one of these, the vehicle was registered to one of the two. I wasn't able to find, you know, exact information on how that went down, how he was on. The two of them were pinpointed as the murderers, although they were. So, it comes down to the trial, and Soto decides to testify against Godwin. Now, we don't know much background on Soto. We just know, you know, what we know, that he was a roommate. He held down Kim and let Godwin kill him and helped him through that process. That's really the extent of what I know of him, what I was able to find in these articles. There wasn't much. I just know he did testify in court against Godwin, saying that, you know, I guess it was his idea. He did this. He killed him. He did this. He did that. So, that did help Soto, in a sense, but he still did serve time, and a lot of it. He didn't get off like I'm assuming he thought he would. Now, he still got a murder charge. He didn't get attempted murder or accessory to the fact. No, he got a murder charge, even though he wasn't the physical person killing. He got a murder charge, which landed him 25 years in jail. Now, Godwin, he got 26 to life. Now, I feel like, you know, Soto should have gotten more. Although I do see the point that, you know, he did just hold the man down. Although I feel like he should have gotten, you know, 25 to life, not just the 25 years. Because I'm sure he was out prior for good behavior, or out on parole, whatever. I'm sure that he was. Because that's how our justice system works. It's rare that anybody serves their entire sentence around, you know, in our day and age. So, now that they're both locked up, this is where the story starts to get interesting. Now that Godwin and Soto are, you know, sentenced and given their charges. By the way, sorry if the sound is different. I just changed rooms. But anyways, so Godwin is sent to, sorry if I butcher the name, Duell Vocational Institute in California. He was then transferred to Folsom State Prison, which, for those of you who don't know, is a max security prison. His cellmate there was named Lorenz Karlick, kind of like garlic, but with a K. On June 5th of 87, Godwin decided, all right, he's sick of being in prison. It only has been, you know, about 4 years that he had been in there, not even a whole 4. And he used a hacksaw and some, other tools that were smuggled to him to cut a hole in the fence wire and escape. Now, he was one of the only men in history to escape from Folsom Prison. And I believe he's the only man to stay away from Folsom Prison on an escape as long as he did. It's believed that the hacksaw and the tools were brought to him and smuggled in by his wife, Shelley. Now, Shelley, again, we don't know much about her at all. We only know that she is his wife and is trying to help get him out of prison. It's also believed that, Karlik helped him plan this escape, so of course that doesn't look good on him either. Now, after getting through the fence, Godwin went into a storm drain that would empty into the American River. He then went to a manhole and crawled 750 feet. Now, inside a manhole, there is no light. So he was crawling in the pitch black for 750 feet. Now, I don't know, but that's pretty dedication, pretty good dedication, because I personally wouldn't do that, but I probably won't go to jail for murder, so I guess I can't really state what I would or would not do in that situation. So he crawls at 750 feet in pitch black, and someone assumed to be, Karlik or Shelley had gotten a raft for him. So this is well planned out. They had put a raft for him to go down the river, and they went so far as painting arrows on rocks to tell him which way to go when he's at like a crossroads or whatever. They wanted to make sure he knew exactly where he was going when he got out of there, and there was not going to be any hiccups in his escape. Now, Godwin's on the run. He's nowhere to be found. In June of 1987, same month, same year, Karlik was arrested and convicted with Glenn's escape. I'm going to assume that Karlik was released prior to the escape and was able to aid him in the, outside world on pieces of the escape route and whatnot. He also probably gave him insight on, what to do, what not to do while in the prison prior to the escape. And in January of 1988, about 6 months later, Shelley was determined to be a federal fugitive due to her aiding his escape also. Now, she was able to run for, the 6 months, but she was captured on February 7th, 1990. So that brought her to running for, let me do some math, roughly 2.5 years she was running. And she was found in Dallas, Texas. Now, if she's found in Dallas, Glenn's on the run, Karlik's locked up. Where is Glenn and why is he not with his wife? You would think that he would have escaped to be with his wife, right? But no, he's nowhere to be found. I don't know if he just was, really well disguised or if he was really well hidden when she was found, but he wasn't found with her. So he, again, assumed to be in Mexico, South America regions, being that he is fluent in Spanish. So we don't know where he's at this point. So they don't know where he is, but they find Shelley. Now, my best guess is he is traveling to Mexico, which he was, and they wanted to travel separately for the fact that they didn't want to get caught together. That would just two people in prison rather than one. I guess that's just logic. And so he travels to Mexico and he gets arrested in Puerto Vallarta. Now, this is much, much down the line. And he was convicted for trafficking drugs in Guadalajara, Gotta say that slow, otherwise I will butcher it. And he was sentenced to 7 years and 6 months in Puente Grande Prison in 1991. So he was on the run for quite some time, obviously. And American authorities, they find him and find out that he is in their prisons in Mexico. And they're like, okay, cool. We know where he is. Let's go ahead and start the proceedings to get him back to America so he can finish his sentence here. And so Godwin finds out about this and he's like, yeah, no, I'm not going back. And instead of just being an adult about it and taking his consequences for his crimes, he kills a drug cartel member while he's in prison in Mexico. Yeah, real smart move, right? And I personally wouldn't have done that. Cartel members are not exactly the right ones to mess with. I wouldn't, no. That's a death wish. But this is his way to put a delay in the extradition so he can plan his escape. Now, the new charge is what put the delays on it. So he successfully ends up making this escape in September of 91. So he was not confined very long at all. Now, he is on the run. Nobody can find him yet again. This guy is an escape artist. It's clear. He lands himself now on the FBI's top 10 most wanted on December 7th of 1996. And he remains on the most wanted list until... I am so sorry, my child is in the background. So he remains on the most wanted list until May of 2016, May 19th to be exact. Now, I encourage everyone to please look up this man, go to the FBI's most wanted website. You can view the history of all of the people who have ever been on America's most wanted lists. He is number 447. He is considered to be armed and dangerous. Please do not approach this man if you happen to see him. Now, if you do see him, call 1-800-CALL-FBI. Now, the real number for that, for those of you who are bad at deciphering letters or just don't want to, it's 1-800-225-5324. Please, please look his image up. I'm going to encourage you to do this for every felon that I speak on in this series. That's the only way they will find him, as if his face is out there and people know what they're looking for. But I will see you guys next week. Have a great week, everybody.